Herzlich willkommen and welcome to a new episode of our podcast show, Masters of the Digital Universe. The first time in English having a guest with a very international e-commerce background and job right now. I'm very, very pleased to welcome Fabian.
Thank you very much, Lenny, for having me. Excited to be here.
And we're going to talk about his company, Depop, and the revolution of resale and the revolution and evolution of a new fashion industry player disrupting the entire fashion industry at the moment. So I'm very pleased to have Fabian on the call. And perhaps we just start into our podcast right away with our first question. So who are you, Fabian? Why are you on the call?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Lenny. So I think as you can hear from my weird accent, I'm originally from Germany, where I studied economics, but I left, an eternity ago, I think over 15 years ago, and subsequently lived in Spain, Africa, the US, and then for the last 12 years here in London. And I think while my original focus has always been to find the role in the sports industry, I joined Microsoft after completing my studies in the US and have been broadly in the tech space ever since, working for Nokia, eBay, and then Facebook prior to joining Depop at the start of 2020.
Great. And before we talk about Depop, because we really need to talk about it, perhaps you could also already give a glimpse at your current role at Depop.
Yeah, so absolutely. So I joined Depop again at the start of 2020, and I'm basically responsible for our trust and safety efforts. And so alongside with my teams, I'm responsible to really ensure that our community has a safe and seamless experience when they come to with us. And I think you can probably ask a lot of people what trust and safety mean. And depending on where you work, it has a different meaning. But, you know, at the very highest level and how we approach this is that in a user-generated content and marketplace setting, we want to prevent issues from happening by proactively being there for our community. And if they occur, how do we step in and resolve them in a timely, good manner for everyone involved? So that's my core focus. And basically, we do this via tooling, policies, and partnerships with other players to ensure that we can guarantee that trusted experience when people come to Depop.
Yeah, a highly relevant topic. I think it's one of those topics every marketplace, every platform economy model is currently having a very strong look at. Not only a very important role at Depop, but in the entire industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in a spectrum where, you know, our platform, similar to other platforms, is basically created for the users and their content, right, is what makes us tick. It's quite important that we, in partnership with them, you know, make sure that we have the right content, behavior, and activities on our site. And yeah, that's not exclusively for Depop, but I think any other social marketplace or social e-commerce player needs to make sure that that is ensured.
So you just mentioned Depop and social commerce. So perhaps just to start with the right definition and also differentiation of Depop's business model. So what's Depop's mission?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Depop is really at the very highest level a fashion marketplace app for the next generation to buy, sell, and discover unique fashion. But beyond that, Depop is not just a place to buy and sell. I think over the course of the years, we really fostered a community of like creative young entrepreneurs and sustainable enthusiasts who are really transforming the fashion industry with the help of Depop. So when we look at our mission, it is really reflected that we want to build the world's most diverse and progressive home of fashion, and basically powered by a community and an ecosystem that's kinder to the planet and kinder to the people. And what we mean by that really is that we strive to empower community to create that new equitable kind of fashion system as a whole. And I think one of the core kind of differentiators for Depop is that anybody who comes to us can really find their own identity, learn the basics of a business when you try to, for the first time, dip your feet into buying or selling something online. They really can connect through creativity and really do a little bit to save the planet as a whole. So that's at the very highest level of what we're trying to strive to accomplish together with our community.
Yeah, very much like those three pillars of your business model and of your reason why, right? So you talk about community experience, unique commerce, and cultural influence. So Could you just elaborate a little bit on those three pillars and how they are reflected in the end in the app and in the experience every user is seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when you look at those like three pillars, right, at the very highest level, right, we are an e-commerce marketplace. So, you know, it's a transactional marketplace where you can buy and sell items. And I think that means that for us, right, everybody has the chance to become an entrepreneur. And especially, you know, given the high focus for our core audience being Gen Z, it really allows everybody to fulfill their passions. So they can discover things. They can also obviously sell unique items, and you really kind of reinvent the value of what, you know, really fashion items mean to you versus, I think, the traditional kind of overconsumption that a lot of things we've seen in the fashion industry around, like, I'm just going to buy another piece to add to my closet and never wear it. I think then the cultural influence is really tailored around like what we're seeing on a daily basis, that, you know, we don't set trends as Depop, as a platform, right? Our users set those trends. And I think one of the interesting things that we see, you know, where we are really leading from the front is that those trends that bubble up, you know, on Depop, bubble up before they even become, you know, fashion trends in the overall kind of industry. So, and as an example, I think most recently there was a trend called cottage core, which at the very highest level means that you are looking, try to imitate the idyllic kind of country lifestyle of, you know, people who live on a farm, right? Something that we've seen bubbling up as well. And if you look at some of the fast fashion kind of trends that are happening right now, it's something that is reflected in some of those activities from brands as well. So I think that's really kind of unique when we look at our community, that they do create trends that kind of shape forward-looking, creative experiences as a whole. And I think then the other piece that we obviously try to do is in terms of like our sustainability approach is that we're really trying to extend the life cycle of garments as a whole, right? Which really helps reduce waste. And we want to be a positive change, right, across the industry. You know, the amount of waste that comes from, you know, clothing these days is crazy. And, you know, we really want to make sure that we support, you know, the circular fashion approach and generating culture where there's more awareness around what, you know, your individual behavior means when you buy clothes in terms of the ecological footprint on the planet as a whole. So I think that's at the very highest level, like our core three pillars. And it's a fascinating evolution when it comes to, you know, some of the trends that we see on an everyday basis on our platform.
Yeah, I mean, I was just astonished how you guys already, what your growth trajectory over the last years already has been. And I think for more or less always more on the German market focused entrepreneur and consultant, it's sometimes really breathtaking to see how much is going on outside of Germany. And apparently Depop is one of those examples where you have a very, very successful business model outside of this huge German market yet. Yeah. So please tell us a little bit about this evolution of Depop over the last years.
Yeah, I think, you know, the platform was actually founded in 2012, and I think 2012, sorry. And I think, you know, the initial approach was not to create kind of a marketplace per se. And I think if you look at the founders' kind of initial idea, it was just to connect creative, like-minded fashion trailblazers effectively, right? And I think it naturally has like grown organically towards, you know, really a destination or a home for like a different approach to fashion for both buyers and sellers, and as well as our partners that we have on our platform. And, you know, obviously the last years have been quite crazy in terms of growth. I think we've been in a very fortunate, you know, position. We right now have roughly 28 million users across 147 markets. And to give you a little bit of a flavor, right? So roughly 90% of those users are Gen Z. And I think that's quite astonishing as well. So on average, I think one in three users in our active markets is between 16 and 34. And our biggest markets right now are the UK, US and Australia, but obviously we don't want to stop there. We want to make sure that, you know, the Depop approach, you know, is is, you know, expanded across other markets as well. And I think, like, fundamentally, obviously, there's a paradigm shift in terms of how people think about fashion consumption as a whole, and how, you know, you can do your little bit to really help, you know, create a different kind of thinking. And it's quite fascinating to see that, you know, this is coming from a Gen Z, you know, who, you know, also are digital natives, right? They are been born and raised with, you know, everything, you know, at their fingers, like a finger hands, like, you know, technology was always available to them. And, you know, they are really kind of driving change for also older generations to educate them. So I think one of the key kind of sound bites I've heard is, right, Gen Z is the first generation where the older generation tries to be more like the younger one. And I think we're trying to, like, support that kind of thinking, that, you know, it's time for us to, like, act on how we can, you know, create less of an impact on this planet. And yeah, so I think when we look at our, like, core users today, I think, like, Gen Z are adopting kind of secondhand or, like, pre-loved items 2.5 times faster than, like, other age groups, right? And I think that's why they're really challenging the status quo, and they're making use of Depop as a platform and really as a community to support that kind of new movement, which is really, like, refreshing to see. And obviously for us, right, we're not dictating on, like, what is creativity on our platform, because we're not putting any boundaries on it. And it's kind of fascinating where people, you know, take, for example, a sweater, and, you know, out of that sweater make 3 different pieces of clothing and, you know, sell it. And it's definitely, I think, a different mindset, which is, you know, has started with Gen Z, but I think it's also now transitioning towards, I think, a broader demographic in terms of awareness on that, you know, having 100 t-shirts in your closet is probably not the most sustainable approach. And is that really a needed approach for you to express yourself?
Super interesting. So if you, because you already mentioned the your typical user groups and also translated into marketing, then more the target groups you're aiming at. So, I mean, basically, I would think that there are probably 3 types of users. You have those users that probably only buy and purchase, and then you have those users that perhaps most dominantly only sell, and then you have those users that do both. Is that right, or is this kind of how you segment your user base, or how would you?
Yeah, so I mean, we've got, I mean, to your point, all 3 of them, right? I think obviously we have, you know, high volume sellers and, you know, those casual sellers on our platform, right? And I think the one thing to understand about Depop is, you know, it's just like one homogeneous kind of community. So I think Depop has a lot of kind of subcultures and sub kind of communities when it comes to, like, activities and how you, like, share ideas. But yeah, you have got that kind of core kind of seller base who really, like, earn a living, right, and become entrepreneurs, right? So we have people who, you know, only make their living by selling on Depop, right? So you've got both those aspects as well. But obviously, right, most of our audience is consumer selling focused as a whole, with the opportunity to grow into something meaningful and kind of expand your store. On the buy side, there's obviously, like, an experience where, you know, you start discover Depop, right? And you start with a buying experience, but then you also realize, you know, this could actually work for me from a selling perspective as well. And we do have a large overlap between people who buy and sell on our platform as a whole, right? And roughly we get today, right, 140,000 kind of new listings on a daily basis. So it's really like ever growing as a whole. Obviously fueled by kind of a market, right? So if you look at the resale market as a whole, I think in 2019, it was roughly at 7 billion, right? And it's kind of meant to grow to like 36 billion by 2024. That's kind of 5x growth in 5 years. And we're kind of helping to fuel that growth. But I think Depop really gives you a unique opportunity to actually test out what it means to kind of sell your wardrobe and enrich your wardrobe by buying, like, unique items as well.
So if you compare that to one of your former employees, eBay, yeah, and I mean, from my perspective, also at eBay, you have that kind of user experience where you have a large group of people that used eBay as a platform where they buy stuff from other consumers in the end and sell at the same time. not only wardrobe items, but probably, of course, a broader selection of assortment in the end and products. But is that comparable in the sense of user behavior?
I would say I think some parts are comparable, right? I mean, ultimately, right? So I think there are a lot of treasure hunters at eBay who look for unique items as well. Obviously, we've got the core focus on fashion, where eBay goes a lot broader. But I think at the there are definitely like similarities, right? When it comes to like you're trying to obviously, you know, monetize some of the consumer selling items that you have on the platform. But I think at the same time, there are also, I think, a lot of differences. So I think the community kind of led approach that we have at Depop, right? People just don't come to buy and sell necessarily. I think when you look at Depop, really the best kind of like soundbite I've heard is, you know, you come for the clothes, but you stay for the culture. There's a lot of kind of cross-sharing, you know, where especially like sellers or buyers are really trying to like exchange thoughts on like new trends, on how you can upcycle an item and, you know, put it back into like the ecosystem, which I think eBay is slightly different in that sense, that you don't have that kind of like large community exchange and kind of community kind of led activities on a platform.
Yeah, that's a great differentiation point. And we'll come to more differentiation factors to other existing players in some minutes. But before that, I mean, now with this kind of background on in terms of user groups and how the platform model is set up, so how has the original business model idea and the monetization model idea in 2012, how has this developed over time until today, and how is it reflected in today's business?
Yeah, I think it's quite a simple and like short answer. I think, you know, we basically, when it comes to like how we monetize or, you know, make sure that we can support a community by also like gathering the right revenues, it's a flat fee commission based model that you also know from like other players such as eBay, but we basically just charge based upon successful transaction on the platform as a flat fee approach, because we do believe that's the easiest one to understand and the fairest one in terms of us supporting our community.
And if you look at this kind of business model, I think it's very seller focused. So in the end, it's about having those people on board that are able to sell. But at the same time, you of course trigger certain effects on more professional sellers that are able to sell higher volumes, because in the end that's fueling your engine, the Depop engine, in terms of commissions. So how do you manage that kind of paradigm, where at the one end you want to have very individual people driving cultural trends on your platform, and on the other hand you with your commission model you rather push volume-based fashion model?
Yeah, I think from a business model perspective, right, obviously this can be attractive for, you know, large volume sellers for sure from a commission base. But I think since we don't incentivize by volume discounts right now, I think it is quite a democratized kind of approach as well. So whether it's Lenny who comes to our platform to sell something for the first time, or, you know, Fabian, for example, who would sell, you know, hundreds and hundreds of items on a site, right? You've got the equal chances of, you know, making a successful sale depending on how you list and how you like share your items as a whole. And I think then like the other kind of important thing that to understand is we are like a social marketplace. So there's a lot of like interaction between what we see on TikTok or Instagram, and how then, you know, people also use those platforms to bring back traffic to Depop, or interest to Depop, as for a better word. And I think that's quite important in terms of like how we I think enable kind of fairness to be discovered, compared to like a, I don't know, classical kind of affiliate program for a very transactional marketplace, where I think large sellers are at a much higher kind of advantage compared to an individual seller.
So you, Fabian, you just mentioned TikTok and Instagram in terms of related, let's call it perhaps ecosystem partners and platforms that also have a big influence on the users on your platform. So in order to give the audience a even better insights on the differentiation of Depop to other players in the market, I would just love to give you some players, and you tell me like how is Depop differentiated towards them. Perhaps for me it would be a great help, and hopefully for the audience as well. So what we see in the market is that they're of course very successful pure online fashion players like ASOS and Zalando, and looking at those two market players, for instance, they also launched resell, or how you in a Depop context would call it pre-loved items business models. So could you reflect a little bit on how is Depop differentiating to those online fashion players that also have kind of a big footprint and gain more and more market share?
Yeah, I think, I think the first thing to really, acknowledge is that this is a growing kind of industry trend, right? And it's a growing kind of pie for everybody. And I think you're right? Pure players such as ASOS, right, have also started, and actually brands as well, right, to think about how they can support resale and sustainable kind of shopping activities as a whole, which I think, from a Depop perspective, we can only just felt welcome, right? Because that actually adds to the kind of mindset shift from everybody. I think when it comes to our positioning, right, we do have a lot of overlap, as I mentioned before, between social platforms such as TikTok or Instagram. And I think what is unique about Depop is that we kind of combine kind of the familiarity and kind of the community approach of social media with the mechanics of a resale kind of marketplace. And I would argue right now there's no other player that kind of combines those two elements in a kind of seamless and authentic way. If I look some of those competitors, that's not to say that others can't have other ways on how they're successful in a fashion or resale marketplace. I think that, but that's kind of where the stickiness of and the success of Depop has come from, that we are able to combine the best of a transactional kind of, I can get my item that I want and that a unique item, together with, well, I can actually do a lot more on Depop. I can actually exchange thoughts and also be a thought leader when it comes to sustainable fashion activities as a whole. So I would say that's our unique niche that we are obviously expanding on. And yes, ultimately it also comes down to how do you improve and evolve, I think, the user experience for everyone, right? eBay, ASOS, ThredUp, whoever you want to name. But I think that's a unique combination between a social experience and the potential to make this a resale or a purchase experience is something I've not seen being built in a similar way.
So from an outsider perspective, so I think the closest would be probably Instagram, that could be related to the kind of concept you have built up, not in the sense of focus and fashion focus, but more from the perspective community, and the commerce aspect is added to the community aspect, not the other way around.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, if we look at Instagram shopping and other kind of areas that are really growing in nature, right? It's probably the closest comparison, right? And we do have a lot of, again, our users that also are active on Instagram and, are pushing the sustainable kind of fashion agenda on that platform as well. I think the way I think about Depop as a whole is we didn't start with one or the other. We kind of always kind of naturally evolved between the social aspect and then, and the resale kind of aspect. Whereas I think others that, really started as a pure kind of social player who are trying to go into the shopping world, there's, I think, a differentiation in terms of authentic experiences as a whole, right? And obviously there are a lot of influencers on Instagram who promote items, and you can shop for items as well, and it's a great kind of avenue to gain traction for your products and services. But I don't think that they have the same approach when it comes to sustainable and long-lasting impact on the ecosystem that we're creating as well. So I'm not, you know, discounting the fact that there's competition. I'm not discounting the fact that there are others, I think, who want to build, you know, new solutions that provide like better avenues. But I do think we found a really good niche that we are, I think confident that we can maintain as well.
Yeah, sounds like it. So, I mean, you just mentioned the more general effects on the industry, on the fashion industry, and also on, of course, on other existing players. So, I mean, just from an economic perspective, the wallet, the size of the wallet of a typical consumer in the world, it's not growing year by year. It's rather shrinking by inflation. And there's a huge a shift potential behind giving the money from a consumer perspective into resale clothing and not bringing it to Primark or Inditex or any other players in the industry. So I think there's kind of if you look at it from a broader perspective and from an industry perspective, there's a huge revolution ahead of us, or it could be, right? And what would be of interest for me would be to understand what kind of consumer behavior shifts are behind this revolution and evolution you described. So what does this shift in the end really mean to the entire industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's yet to be seen, like, what are the long-lasting impacts to, I think, the fashion industry as a whole. But I think the three things that I would call out is obviously right there. So we're really seeing that movement from, like, a traditional kind of retail approach for individual consumers towards really, like, sustainable and circular models. So I think for the first time you check, and I would include myself in that as well, you check yourself and then be like, how are you consuming things today and what kind of impact you're creating? I think for that, there was, I think, the first step on, like, creating awareness of, you know, for example, like, that past, you know, fashion creates more kind of ecological damage to the world on a yearly basis than, you know, aviation, for example, right? And I think that's just kind of the first thing that people needed to be made aware of, because we've been, I think, conditioned to always, if I can find a $3.99 shirt, I can buy 10 of those, and if they're sustained, I'm just going to be throwing it away, or it's going to be, you know, lasting, being my goal for foreseeable future. So I think that awareness gap kind of needed to be created. And I think obviously other, like, major shifts around, like, also being more aware of the impact on, like, climate change and everything that we do as an entire planet, I think has definitely helped Depop and has helped kind of that approach. And I do think what's also great to see is that I think also, like, some of the, like, fast fashion, like world-leading brands, right? If you look at Kerins and, you know, some of the real kind of most promising brands on this earth are also starting to think about how they can see and use, you know, solutions that give back to the planet as well, which I think can only be welcome. I think Levi's just also introduced, I think, a take back program on their side where you can basically send in your old kind of jeans as well. So I think that's I think where, you know, people will always buy new stuff to a certain extent, and you need to buy new stuff. But I think even fast fashion realizes that there needs to be a shift in terms of how you enable, you know, again, the extension of using, you know, a garment or a life cycle as well, which comes back to, you know, not landing in, you know, landfills and just being, you know, put back to the planet. But also even brands are looking to how they can at an additional pillar that enables that kind of sustainable shopping behavior. So if you ask me, that I think sustainable trend is not a trend. It's actually a long lasting change to the industry. And I think it's going to be really interesting how in each of those individual brands do react to this, because it does mean that, you know, the average frequency of how much a user buys on an annual basis, you know, on new items will go down. But I think there's also an opportunity for brands to think about how they can, you know, enable, you know, some of the already bought items to be put back into the ecosystem in a slightly different way. So I think it's similar to other industries. I think this is not just a trend. This is something that people need to adapt to in terms of, like, new norm. And it really depends on each of the brands on how they're going to want to react and and work with this. But I can tell you, like at Depop, right, we've done collaborations with, you know, Polo Ralph Lauren, and we just, I think last week had a collaboration with Adidas, right, to really also show what you can do in terms of sustainable, you know, shoes or merchandising as a whole, because there are so many, I think, different avenues that also brands can tap into to remain relevant for sure.
Good to hear. But in the end, I mean, looking at established brands and they need to adapt, right? So if you see this trend already happening so fast in larger brands like the ones you mentioned, from an existing brand perspective, there's no way around it.
I think so. I mean, that's my honest, without having a crystal ball ahead of me, I think, you know, it's fair to say that you need to adapt to this and, you know, not fight the fact that it's needed for the planet and the consumer wants to shop slightly differently than they've done in the past. And, you know, blocking that compared to other industries is, I think, a never solution. So I think you need to evolve with that and, you know, adjust your, I think, planning cycles as well. And it's going to be interesting if you think about, I think generally, if you look at the e-commerce space, right, historically, you know, brands went on catwalks and that's where kind of trends were made, right? So you go to the Milan fashion show and trends were made as well. I think right now with the democratization of, you know, the internet availability, a lot of the trends that, you know, brands pick up are made by like individuals as well, right? And I think that's already another piece of the evolution that, you know, brands need to come to terms with, that it's not just prescribing or telling users what they should be shopping for, but that the user is actually telling them what they should be producing and what they should be kind of putting in front of users as well, which is a fundamental shift that I've seen.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree to that. So we're talking about evolution, not only of the entire industry change, but now coming back to Depop. Yeah, what's on the outlook? So what are your ambitions? Where can you bring your mission to new markets? What are
you
trying?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, right, you know, we got pretty ambitious growth plans for the next couple of years to obviously expand our footprint. We're definitely looking at, you know, European expansion this year. As I said before, I mean, right now we are really, our core markets are UK, US and Australia. But we are open in like 147 markets globally. And we want to kind of build up that kind of global following as a whole. So we're also available in Germany, by the way. Obviously, it's a very small market for us as well, but we're starting to test our way into Germany as an interesting market as well. And yeah, hopefully we can, you know, bring the Depop mindset and the Depop approach to Europe and the entire world at some point over the next years as well.
So, I mean, talking about that, I mean, it's, why is Germany such a small market yet? Because it's a community model, and you really need to first get people that really embrace that kind of social environment.
It's a good question. So I probably don't have all of the answers for it, but I think, you know, you've got, I think, you know, even, you know, obviously resale platforms such as, I think, Kinderkreisel and other things, right? I think Vinted is also obviously a player that, you know, has you know, expanded from like Eastern Europe to others as well. I don't know why. I think we, from a deeper perspective, have not, you know, made such a big imprint. But I think that it was just because I think the sheer focus of our activities, to be completely honest, has been on like the growing the footprint in our like our core markets. And I think, as much as we can, we want to bring that kind of mindset to Germany, but also with the right tools and user experiences as a whole, for which obviously localization efforts need to be in place as well. So Depop is a global platform. So you, Lenny, you can buy a shirt on Depop today, and I encourage you to do that. But it's not because I think the mindset is not there. I think it's also, I think the ease of use, and I think the you know, the network's effects, I think, have not been felt there that much yet.
Yeah, understood. So apart from your growth plans at Depop, what kind of challenges are you facing? I mean, this, of course, it's a success story, but at the same time, you deal with certain topics and problems every other social platform and community model is dealing with, right? That's also why you were on board, and topics like trust and safety play such an important role for Depop as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think, you know, for us, right, so trust and safety is like integral to our marketplace, to our business model. And, you know, our community is entirely built on like interaction and connection between buyers and sellers, right? So I think that's why, you know, I'm here right now as well, right, that we make sure that the safety of our community is our top priority, right? And I think similar to every other platform, right? So we're investing heavily in that space, right? So that, you know, people can have like a world-class experience and we can protect our users. And I think the biggest challenges are, right, like any other business that is scaling, right? You've got millions of messages, millions and millions of inventory to really find the right solutions to, you know, police this at scale. You can't just do with human like firepower, right? So you need to build the right tools and capabilities that help you kind of protect users as a whole. And sometimes that can be difficult, right? And, you know, to give you like a couple of examples, right? We need to make sure that people talk in the right way to each other, because a lot of like interaction and transactions on our platform are built through like exchanging of messaging between buyers and sellers. And, you know, sometimes we need to make tough decisions in terms of, you know, who we allow to keep on the platform or suspend users that kind of violate those guidelines. I think the last thing I would say, right, in a user-generated kind of space, you will never able to kind of always address 100% of the problems at any given day, right? Not Facebook, not TikTok, not others. But I think as long as you can be transparent or like what you expect from your community, you're in a better spot. And some of the like issues that you see, I think you can also address through like education, right? Versus, you know, fraudsters that you definitely want to keep off the platform. And if you identify them, kick off the platform as well. So I think most of the challenges are not unique to, I think, Depop as a whole, right? It's bad content, bad behavior, and kind of bad activities happening on the platform. But I think we're building up the right tools, and it's not, you know, in this trust and safety space, it's not just saying like, I do A, B, and C, I'm done. It's an all ever evolving space where, you know, sophistication of attacks goes up, sophistication of like potential like frauds go up. And so you need to make sure that you scale your protection measures accordingly. That's why it's, I think it's a fascinating space, and especially on the interface between social commerce and, you know, a marketplace environment, a lot of things for us to address for sure.
Definitely. Fabian, it's a super interesting industry. It's a super interesting business model. I'm super pleased that you found the time to guide us through the new revolution of the fashion industry and a really fast growing player in the social commerce business model space. So thanks a million for all the insights. I would be more than pleased to have at least one follow up podcast with you, because you know the time limitations I put on our podcast show. We're a little bit above our 35-minute dimension, but of course I give you some more seconds, yeah, to also say goodbye and give your summary onto our audience if you like.
Well, first of all, thanks a lot, Lenny. It was really great to talk to you as well, and like keep up the good work on the podcast. I really enjoy them thoroughly. I think the only thing I would say very quickly is, you know, if you haven't shopped pre-sale in terms of fashion, just try it out. Like, honestly, I think, you know, I was not the biggest, you know, I think resale consumer before I really got into this space. And if you pick a piece of clothing, right, there's one rule I always say, like, if you have sentimental value to it, right, keep it, right? And if you don't, then think about, you know, not just putting it into the closet, but put it back into the ecosystem. So no, like, I think no harm will be done to the planet for the foreseeable future. But thanks a lot for having me. And yeah, good luck with everything for you and your team as well, Lenny.
Fabian, thanks a million. And thanks for everybody listening to us. Please, as always, write us some comments, give us feedback. And of course, reach out to Fabian, yeah, in case you need anything in terms of secondhand clothing. No, I'm kidding. Thanks so much. Okay, talk to you soon and hear from you soon again.